Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Now, as I was saying, we have our regular GP, Dr. Maura Finn, back with us with part two of a conversation about infertility in men and women. And this week we're going to focus on the treatments available. As I said to you earlier, you can still get your questions in 51551 or email us today, cb@rte.ie. Maura, good morning.
Good morning, Claire. You've had a busy morning there.
Very busy morning, It's good to talk to you again. And last week we heard from people about some of their concerns about the causes of infertility. And today we want to talk about the treatment. So where do we start?
Well, we always start at the simplest, which is understanding the woman's cycle and education and reassurance. And very often people will come to me and would have been struggling maybe for a number of months or even years. And explaining the basics of cycle, explaining how the physiology works, makes a big difference. And also reassuring them that, like I said last week, 85% of couples will conceive within a year. So that's the start. But obviously, for a large number of people, they need more input than that. And the first thing we do is we look at ovulation and maybe induce ovulation. So for somebody who may not be having a regular cycle like polycystic ovaries or something, we give medication. This can be done in GP surgeries, and I would do it frequently, where you give medication to actually stimulate the ovaries to produce eggs. And then the couple are encouraged to have sex at timed intervals when they would be more likely to be ovulating and more likely to conceive, and then followed up afterwards with a blood test to see if they did ovulate. And that can be done in GP surgeries. There's more in kind of in-depth procedures like that done in fertility clinics, where they use not just clomiphene but FSH stimulators as well. So the whole thing is you time the intercourse and you make sure an egg is being produced and you hope that that will work. That's a cheap and relatively easy procedure. Then if that doesn't work, they go on to more kind of the more costly and more in-depth procedures that we talk about.
Okay, so are we talking IUI? Is that moving on to that?
Yeah, IUI is part of that. So in IUI, what you do is you actually introduce, so in this situation, there may be a physical reason why a woman can't get pregnant, because the sperm can't actually enter the uterus. So the sperm is actually, a sperm sample is taken and a sperm is introduced with a fine catheter into the uterus, again with timed ovulation and egg stimulation with medication for the woman. So that it's just a more timed, and it is a laboratory based intervention. Then the next things we would go for would be the more people will not be familiar with IVF, which is in vitro fertilization. And that's quite a tricky, expensive and invasive procedure. And a lot of people will be familiar with it, but I'll explain it.
Do, because I think people, yeah. You're right, people are familiar with it, but unless people have been through it, they probably don't know what it entails in many cases.
Yeah, so what it entails, initially, a woman is given a lot of medication during this time. So initially they're given medication to block all hormone production. Then they're given medication to stimulate egg production. And these are usually injection stimulation in medication, and maybe a nasal spray as well. And it's very finely balanced. You're trying to encourage the eggs to produce follicles, or encourage the ovaries to produce follicles and eggs, but also not to mature too quickly. And they're watched and they're ultrasounded in this time to see what's happening. These follicles then, once the woman has come to a point where they look like they are about to mature, she's given medication to release eggs. She's also then, a very fine needle is put into the ovaries and the fluid from the follicles is taken out. Now this is done under sedation because it can be a painful procedure, and sedation and pain relieving medication, and sometimes under anaesthetic, but rarely. And an embryologist is there to check what is coming out of the follicles, look at it, retrieve an egg if it looks healthy, and then these are then matured, are placed into a petri dish, and the sperm has been taken at the same time, and that's put into the petri dish as well, and the two are encouraged to actually fertilize outside of the body. And that is the essential thing in IVF. Then the fertilized egg is allowed mature for 3 days, maybe up to 5 days, depending on what type of procedure is happening, and that fertilised egg is then put back into the woman in a second procedure.
It's emotionally and physically challenging.
Oh, it's draining in an extreme, and it's so time consuming as well. I mean, when a couple are involved in this, it really involves a huge number of visits to the fertility clinic. It involves a huge amount of expense. The medication can involve a lot of side effects to that, and there are risks involved with any procedure too. But a huge number of couples will be very, very happy to go through that, especially when they're successful. And the success rates vary. But they can be up to 50-60% in a young couple. But this is one of the tragedies of fertility, really, is that young couples don't tend to seek help because they may not have realised that there is a problem. So that's one of the reasons why our chat about fertility causes is so important as well, so that people will look for help early on.
Yeah, so as we say, none of it is easy. None of it is cheap either. Now, I know there was some good news for couples who might need to go down the IVF route in the budget. It'll be funded by the state for the first time next year. The other side of this, and you mentioned the success rates there, is that you're not guaranteed a good or successful outcome.
Oh, absolutely not. And I mean, and they usually kind of stop treatments beyond a certain age too. I think the budget was a very kind of brief one-liner, as far as I could see, that there was supports being suggested. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that would involve, but it's a very welcome initiative. But will it be allowed several times? Will there be an age limit? These are all the questions we don't know yet. The success rates really vary, and any couple who's involved in this process will have investigated this to the nth degree and will know all the individual clinics and what they will claim to have success rates. And they will be on forums and they will be talking to people about it. But they tend to be doing it in a private capacity, and it causes a huge amount of personal stress and stress within the couple. Okay. I think it's a really good thing that if this was brought out into the public arena far more, and that we could actually encourage people to get involved in the process and at a younger stage if need be.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll inspire some couples to talk about it or explore their options maybe a little sooner than they might have done. What then, Maura, about donor sperm and donor egg treatments?
There is no donor sperm donation in Ireland. So it's provided, all the fertility clinics will provide access, the procedure, which would be an IUI procedure normally with donor sperm, but they're from frozen samples that are sourced outside of the country. Now, there's a source from very good clinics, and there'd be very, very strict criteria about them. But the Irish legislation is very strict, and we don't have donor sperm in Ireland, nor do we have donor egg, unless it is from a friend or a sister, in which case the clinics will facilitate that on occasion. And what happens in that situation is the same procedure as I was talking about, but instead of the couple's own egg or sperm, it's donor. And sometimes there will even be double donor egg and sperm. And this is great. This means that possibilities are available for same-sex couples or single women, and it's broadening the possibility of achieving a pregnancy.
I wanted to ask you about age limits when it comes to clinics offering fertility treatment, and I have a listener here who says, I'm 43, almost 44, I'd still like to have children. I've recently started perimenopause. Do I have any hope or options?
Well, there's always hope. That's the first thing. And perimenopause is a state when your ovaries are beginning to fluctuate and hormones are fluctuating, but there's still eggs being produced. And it is a tricky time for women, because very frequently they forget that they're fertile still. So she's still in a fertile situation. However, a lot of fertility clinics do have an upper age limit of about 43. And that is because the success rates fall off below that age. However, donor egg would be a possibility there, because some of the success rates failure is because of the quality of the eggs at a certain age. So there's definitely options, and I would strongly advise her to investigate it further. If she's involved as a couple, that's one option. But it's a single women very frequently will undergo this process too. And I would advise her to talk to somebody sooner rather than later.
Okay, when you're talking about IVF, the success rates, if you're over 44, they reduce quite significantly, don't they?
Yeah, down to maybe about 5 or 4%. Now, that's going to sound very negative to people, but, you know, not everybody will need IVF. And, you know, there may be, that would be IVF using own eggs as well, and possibly donor egg would be another option there. So, you know, that sounds stark, but I think it's really important that this technology is improving all the time too. And I would definitely suggest somebody, there's always hope. Up mm-hmm. into the, you know, so I would suggest that you talk to somebody.
Now, this is from a 28-year-old male trying to conceive with my partner. I have a low sperm count. I've been told that the temperature of the testes might be important. Lots of people say that underwear has an impact on the sperm count, but I've never heard this from a clinical professional. Sometimes it's recommended to stop wearing Y-fronts and switch to boxer shorts. Could something like this really make a difference to sperm count? And we have the same query in from a man called Sean, who would just like some advice on temperature issues for men to have healthy sperm.
Well, they're quite right. Sperm quality and quantity is very important. And sometimes you'll have somebody who'll have a semen analysis that will be reported as being normal. But however, what they'll have is a problem with DNA fragmentation of the sperm. And this won't be found unless it's looked at in a fertility clinic. And a number of factors influence DNA fragmentation, and heat is one of them. And it is well understood that wearing tight underwear and excessive heat can cause problems with sperm quality. And we usually recommend that you don't wear tight underwear. We also recommend that, you know, men who actually drive for a living, who are sitting for long periods of time, are sitting because of their jobs, that can cause problems. And using a laptop on your lap can actually cause a problem too because of the heat generation. Mm-hmm. So they're quite right, but it's one of many, many other factors, and diet and exercise and nutrition are really important. And for men, I mean, we frequently talk about women in this situation, but
yes,
for men, diet is so important too. And zinc and selenium and omega-3s and 6s are all proven to improve sperm quality.
Would you like to see people taking a supplement or getting those through their diet?
And through their diet, it's always best. And, you know, what you're talking about is fresh fruit and vegetables. Nuts are a good source of selenium and zinc. You know, a healthy diet, low fat, low sugar, because diabetes and obesity cause problems for male fertility as well. However, there are special formulations that are designed for men who are trying to conceive. And, you know, in a situation where they've done everything else, it's no harm whatsoever in getting something that is specifically designed for preconception.
OK, another one here. I have a wonderful daughter and son-in-law, says this listener. They are able to become pregnant, but unfortunately, around week 8 or 9, the baby's heart stops beating. Both parents are under 40. They are careful with diet and exercise, but not over the top. I know this is a common problem, but is there anything they can do, or is there a particular reason for this? It's very sad to hear that in the first instance.
It's really hard. And in that situation, they are achieving pregnancy, and what's happening is recurring miscarriage. And first of all, once you've had 3 miscarriages, which sounds so dreadful in the first place, but there is clinics that actually investigate recurring miscarriage, and they're probably in that situation where they need to have basic investigations done, make sure that anatomically the lady's okay. And probably genetic issues. There is almost certainly a chromosomal issue there if there's implantation and everything's working okay, and then the baby dies. Then also endocrine issues as well, in case there's a hormone imbalance. So the daughter needs to be investigated fully. They probably both need to be investigated in case there's some sort of chromosomal issue that they're, when both their DNAs meet, is causing a problem that isn't.
So it's time now to get some help with
Absolutely.
That one and get some professional advice. Maura, thank you so much once again. Dr. Maura Finn there, our regular GP, and we'll be speaking to Maura again very soon. Coming up next, though, Brian O'Connell has been finding out what's going on with house prices, and he'll tell us what he found out after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.